All right, here we go. Welcome to podcast number 4.
Ooh, episode 4 makes me feel like an old man.
Technology now.
Yes.
No more tape recorder.
Yes.
We're going straight to digital, baby, all the way.
We also have a brand new nice table. We're over at the second Rockstar studio, which is Dan's house. His couch is much more comfortable than those fold-out chairs we used over at my place.
That's right. We just need the eggshell foam for the walls, and we'll be all set.
Ooh, eggshell foam.
Yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah. So, shall we get right into it?
Sure, let's go.
All right, the first item up for bids. No, the first item on the list under martial arts stuff is Ki real? I've been trying to think of topics, martial arts topics we can discuss, and this is one of those that sort of, I think, haunted a lot of people as far as, you know, when you talk about acupuncture and acupressure and board breaking has a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about... What, the guys who bend the swords and all that jazz?
Yes.
So what's your take on it?
I definitely think that Ki is real. But it's not this mystical, magical energy. Everybody has energy. There's this energy. That's what we're made of. I mean, we're made of electrons and all this other crap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible when you get in good enough physical and mental condition that those two components will play off each other to the point where you can do things that people will think are superhuman, but they're not really. Anybody's capable of doing it. You have to practice at it and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's not...
Well, that's an interesting take. I think I'm a little more skeptical in that I think that there are a lot of things involved in self-hypnosis, and there's a lot of medical things that we have yet to discover about the human body.
Correct.
And I don't think that what these people are doing, and I think especially of the sword benders and things like that, I don't think they're miraculous.
Right.
I think they are yet to be discovered physical properties. So I don't think it's anything that is outside the bounds of biology or chemistry. It's just we haven't quite figured it out. And I would beg to guess that if you put a university research team on a project like that for a couple of years, they'd probably figure out the biological reason that someone can bend a sword with their neck or throat or whatever the
right
case might be.
Well, and a lot of those kinds of things, too, are smoke and mirrors. I mean, you can set
right
anything up to make yourself look good.
Right.
Even board breaking.
Sounds yeah impressive.
Right, and it looks impressive.
Because it cracks and
right
splinters
but
fly.
But if you put a board, you know, I mean, just it's the laws of physics, man.
Right.
You put a board, you know, and put it up on cement blocks, and there's nothing in the middle holding
right
it up.
And you go with the grain.
Right, and you go with the grain. Of course you're going to break
yeah
it.
And the one I'm most familiar with that looks the most impressive to me, and that's not to say this stuff doesn't take technique.
That's
and doesn't
true
take power. It does.
Right.
But the one I'm most familiar with is these long slabs of cement.
Yes.
Or concrete.
Yep.
And they stack them up, say, 10 high.
Right.
And they put popsicle sticks
right
well between them.
Just a little bit of space.
Just a little bit of space. And if you do the physics, and your fulcrum point is in the middle of that thing.
Right.
And obviously the longer they are, the more pressure you're going to get when you hit the center of it to break it in half.
That's true.
And I've seen a couple of guys do 10. And one of the black belts in my old school tried 10, got through about 8 of them. And he was a well-trained black belt. So there's no doubt that it takes a lot. It's very challenging.
Right, and there's technique to it, and there's skill to it. Don't get me wrong.
But I think you're right. I don't
that,
think it's
but...
this magical energy that
right
emits out of your fist to break these
right
these things. It's just it's pure
right
physical power.
Right, right. And when people say – when people talk about chi in my mind, that's a coming together of mind and body.
And I think it's a certain synchronicity.
Yes.
I like to call it synchronicity, because one of the examples that I like to have is, or I like to reference, is a golf swing. And if you've ever played golf and ever hit a really good ball, like hit it and it feels right,
yep,
it sounds just right, and it goes really far and it goes really straight.
Yes.
That is rock solid proof that you have the physical capability of playing like Tiger Woods.
Correct.
What you don't have is the mental consistency.
Yep.
To do it time and time again, every time the same way. So really, it's just all a mental game.
Correct. And the people who, you know, who are the really good martial artists that you, when you work with them, you can feel it. The thing you feel about them
is the synchronicity.
Is that synchronicity, that consistency. They do this consistently every time they do it.
Yep.
And that's the way it's supposed to be done, so it feels right.
Yeah. Now, I will say I had an interesting experience with an Aikido master, which was I wish I could remember his name. He was on the east side of Michigan, and he was this little tiny guy. And I swear, I remember him throwing guys around. And I'm like, oh, that's a bunch of bullshit. You know, they're faking it. And then he asked me to uki for him, and he was throwing me around, hardly without touching me. And I went down. And I don't know, maybe it was mental, maybe it was just psychological, like I was expecting it, and I sort of went with it because I was expecting it, but it was a bizarre experience, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So, real quick, let us mention our website, www.roxormedia.com.
Yes.
Head up to roxormedia.com. We've got 4 versions of our podcast available, audio, iPod,
iTunes.
iPod Alley.
Right.
We've got a link to iTunes.
But iTunes is fucking us right now.
Yeah, iTunes, we're having trouble getting up on iTunes. If you want us to add us to iTunes, right-click on that iTunes feed, do copy shortcut, go into iTunes Advanced, and then subscribe to podcast and paste our feed into the text window.
Correct.
That will get you our feed on iTunes.
Right.
So, if you want to email us, it's podzor, PODXOR, at roxormedia.com. We also have Sterling at roxormedia.com if you want to write Sterling directly, and Dan at roxormedia.com if you want to write me directly.
Wow, this sounds like a real radio show.
I know, it does, doesn't it?
Good God.
Good God.
Real quick, while we're selling martial arts stuff, and I remember it, I was talking to our instructor, Sensei Chuck. Peace out, Chuck. We were mispronouncing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Unbeknownst to us, we're Americans here. We speak American.
That's right.
But we actually studied San Yundo, and we were calling it San Yundo.
Yeah.
San, of course, is the letter is 3 in Japanese.
Right. For try.
Right. So for the correct pronunciation is San Yundo, for anybody out there.
And I'm sure, actually, that we're probably murdering it anyway.
Yeah, but like I said, so, we're American, speak English.
The more correct, the better, I guess.
Yeah, so I figured we'd correct that out because Chuck said something about that.
Yeah.
And
Sterling, you're going for your black belt tomorrow.
Tomorrow's my black belt test.
Good luck on that.
It's
going to
be
there.
4 hours of fun and pain all rolled up into one.
So next podcast, we'll report on how that went.
Yes. If I can still speak, I guess.
Yeah. So item 2 on our martial arts list is Man Stabs Son. I was so horrified by this article that I wanted to mention it. Some guy was doing, it sounded like from the article anyway, some martial arts demonstration example thing with his son.
Well, they're trying to figure it out, and they're calling it play fighting.
Yeah, like, play fighting. That's what the quote was, play fighting. Using a real fucking knife.
Right.
And he stabs his son. And the reason I was so horrified by this is that if you're in martial arts, one of the first things you should learn is responsibility.
Yes.
And that this is not a game. It's not a toy. It's violent, dangerous acts.
Correct.
That you're learning. And you need to respect them.
Right.
Not fuck around with your son with a big steak knife.
Yep. And I don't care how long you've been doing it. I don't
Right.
care how
No,
good you think you
absolutely not.
are. When you're working out with someone to teach them things and you're working out in the dojo, you don't use real weapons.
No.
You don't do it. And okay, you can. I'm sure some of you out there are going, well, I use real weapons. I've never had a problem. Good for you. But one of these days, when you lop
Right.
your arm off or cut somebody else's arm off or slice
Yep.
their neck, you're going to feel like a real ass.
Yep.
So
And
just
even
don't do it.
even when I went to Chan's Kung Fu, they used even a demonstration. The swords that they were using were these sort of floppy,
The
the
aluminum,
aluminum
yes.
floppy swords,
Yep.
and those seem pretty. I think those could take off a finger if they were. But at the same time, in all honesty, you're dealing with two highly trained black belts, and they both understand. They fully understand the risks involved.
Right.
So I think that's a little bit different than a guy and his son, but still. It's dangerous,
Yeah,
people.
and
Respect. You know, it's just like with gun training. One of the first things you teach people is respect for the weapon. And if they don't respect the weapon, they're going to get hurt.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. The minute you let down your guard and the minute you think, ah, I know what I'm doing, guess what? It's the
Yeah.
same thing with driving too.
Yep.
This you've driven home, back and forth between work and home every day for the last 15, 20 years, and you subconsciously zone out, and
Yep.
that's when you die because you're not really paying attention. You've done this a million
There's an
times.
aviation saying called complacency kills. So anyway, that's my little diatribe to
Knives and don't do drugs.
yeah. And respect your art if you're a martial artist.
Yes.
Tech tips. This is a new section I added just because I love it so much. Google's got a personal homepage just like my Yahoo.
I saw that.
And I absolutely love it. I love it, love it, love it. I never really understood the full impact of RSS feeds before.
Nice one.
Thank you. But what this Google homepage lets you do is up in the upper left-hand corner, there's a customize. And on the bottom of that section, it actually lets you put in your own RSS feeds.
Oh,
Not your
nice.
own RSS feeds, but any RSS feed that you find on the web.
Right.
So then your Google homepage can be customized with your own RSS feeds, and it's a very, very nice and clean way. You know, even my Yahoo does some of that stuff. It's messy.
Well, I think that's all very fine and well, but I, for one, I've got so many web pages and blogs and other crap that I do that I just can't stomach one more
Oh, well, see, I just switch. That's the
homepage.
only one I use now.
Well, right, but I mean, I can't. I've tried that before. I've done all the my
Well,
homepage, but
what's your default page when you open up?
I just go regular Google. That's it.
Well, have you seen this?
Yeah, I looked at it. I checked it all out. It was very cool, and but I just that's one of those things. Even for me, like I've been messing with one of the
Because
other
for
items
me,
we.
this is pretty much regular Google. It's
Right,
just got stuff on the bottom.
right, and the stuff that you can do on Google homepage is sort of like Google Desktop, which is the little desktop version of it.
Yes.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier. They're fun, they're a little bit gadgety, but
Right.
after a while, I just don't see the point in it. If I'm going to go get news, I'm going to take some quality time, go out and look at the news sites myself and read them that way. Something about just going
See.
up there to do that, I don't know.
Well, my thing is that, for example, I like to read, on occasion, I like to read Will Wheaton's blog. And I haven't done it in a long time. And the reason I haven't done it in a long time is because I just don't think about it. I just don't think of it.
Right.
And I think with this, I've sort of got it on my homepage. I can quickly scan slash dot. I can really fast scan wired. I used to go up to slash dot every day and like sit and read through stuff. Now I don't do that anymore. I just look at the titles now. And if
Yeah.
I'm more interested in something, I click on it. And
Well, maybe I'll have to look a little more into
I
that.
think the reason I do that actually is because I was finding that I was spending 20 minutes, a half an hour, just sifting through the articles on Slashdot.
Yeah.
And now I open up my Google homepage, I scan pretty much all the pages I'm interested in, and check into stuff that I want to check into without having to go to each individual page.
Right, but all the time you spend, just quickly scanning stuff, all the time that you lose having to surf through all the pages, that means you have to work.
Right, that's true. That's very true. Hey, did you know this, dude? Under if you add a feed to Firefox,
Firefox.
it's actually an active what do they call them? An active feed. It's an active bookmark.
Yep.
So it'll update accordingly. But the other thing that you can do that I just found out was at the bottom of every active feed, there is a open in tabs.
Right. It opens all the feeds you have in.
It opens all the items in that feed.
Right.
In its own separate tabs. Correct. Which is really cool.
And for anybody out there who's still using IE, stop it. Stop it right now.
I have found that there are not every page opens up well in Firefox. So,
well, that's because those idiots are developing specifically for IE, right. Which you should not do if you want to get out to the public. And if you're going to do internal stuff and you want to do it for IE, I understand all that. But IE is, because it's the most well-known browser out there, people write the most viruses for it, the most forums for it, all that stuff. It's a horrible spreader of viruses and stuff on the internet.
And I pretty much use IE all the time. I mean, not IE, Firefox all the time.
I highly recommend Firefox for
it's
everybody.
It's a very good browser.
It's very well done.
It's free. Download it, try it. If you don't like it, get rid of it.
If you don't like it, go back to IE and your viruses. That's fine by us.
Oh, shit. I minimized our outline.
Damn it.
Where is it? There it is.
Okay, let's move
Google
on.
Google Desktop. I downloaded the Google Desktop.
Google Desktop is very similar
cool,
to the Google My Homepage. It's customizable. You got it. I don't know. I think it uses RSS feeds is what it does in the back end.
Yeah,
really.
It does. It does.
And it just puts it on your desktop. The nice thing about Google Desktop is it indexes your hard drive.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I don't know if you've ever tried to do a search in Microsoft Windows for something with their search
engine.
It takes
forever.
It's the biggest pain in my ass ever.
Yeah.
In fact, I go out of my way to not use it because it's so painful. I'll just manually look for
stuff. Can you search for files as well?
Yeah. You can actually search in PDFs, in text files, at the Google
That's crazy.
Top. And it's super fast.
Yeah, it is crazy fast.
Yeah. So worth checking out. It also integrates very well with Google Talk.
Yes, it does.
And Google
Talk. Google Talk is really cool.
Google Talk
is the new.
You need
to bring a microphone to work so we can really try
I
that
know.
Out.
If anybody is interested, you should look up Google Talk. It runs on the Jabber server stuff, so Google's supporting some of that. I don't know if Jabber's open source. Is that what it is? So Google supports open source, which is rare for a big software company to support something that's not their own, some sort of standard, you know, like Sony or Microsoft. Those guys always develop their own custom crap instead of trying to use something that's good that's out there already.
Oh, did you hear that Google, when they're offering a bunch of shares, they're generating some revenue? The number of shares that they're offering is pi without the 3 times a million. So you know how pi – what's pi?
3.14.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada.
It's like 1.4 million shares. It's 1.4 million dot, – you know, and it has the rest of the decimal places.
That's too funny.
Pi exactly. So I don't know.
That's too funny.
I just think I like the culture of Google. They just seem – very open source friendly. I know a lot of people are sort of ragging on them now because they're getting very Microsoft-y as far as monopolizing stuff. But
what are they monopolizing? Everything they offer is free. If you don't want to use
and
it, you
open
use
source.
Something else.
And open source. I mean, it's just like, you know, with the Jabber client thing. If you want to develop something around it, if you want to develop an API for the Google Desktop.
Right.
You've got everything at your fingertips right there. They let you do it. They want you to do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, for anybody that's curious how that sounds, there's a blog – there's a – not a blog. There's a podcast out there called Security Now, and it is Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte.
Okay.
And Steve Gibson is the guy that – Zone Alarm.
Yes, I have.
Play with that. And he had that really famous – article about tracking that guy down that was doing the DOS attacks on his server.
Oh, that's right.
That's Steve Gibson.
Okay.
So they have a podcast called Security Now, and the last one they did, episode 2, Steve Gibson was connecting to Leo Laporte's machine via Google Talk.
Nice.
And it sounded really good.
Yeah, well, we tried it. I mean, you had the microphone at work.
I couldn't hear what you were saying, so
but,
I don't know.
But I could hear what you were saying, and it was crystal clear.
Was it really?
It was.
That's
awesome. In fact, I didn't even think you were – because you weren't talking at first. All I heard was click, 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 and I was typing at the same time, and I thought it was me. I thought it was feedback of me typing. So all of a sudden, I stopped, and I mean, I could hear you clear as day typing.
And
on
all
keyboard.
I had to do, essentially, I was talking pretty much like I am now.
Yeah. You click the call button, I answer, and it's awesome. It's going to get better. They're still very much in beta.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them add, like, tabbed Windows game The game client's very good. Yes. It looks tabbed windows in there.
I don't. I actually. I like separate windows.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't. I want the option for tabs. Yeah. I love tabbed windows. One of the reasons I love Firefox.
You know,
one of the
reasons I don't like the tabbed windows is the tabbed window in game turns green when someone has said something.
Right.
And I am red green colorblind.
Right.
And I cannot tell you how many software developers and game developers, 10%. Of the male population is red, green, colorblind.
Yeah. Red and green are two of the biggest colors for, well, I mean, it's the goal-stop mentality.
Right.
That's what you use.
And they don't take that into consideration when they do this stuff. And it's very frustrating. It's not so much the red and green. The red and green aren't so bad. It's that when you have an orange and a yellow, that's a real problem.
Really?
Or a purple and blue is a real problem.
Because they're too close.
Because, well, purple is blue with red.
Yes.
So purple oftentimes looks blue.
Yeah.
So anyway, any developers out there? Google Desktop, Google Homepage, Firefox, check them out. All good stuff.
Yep.
Any questions, come up to rockstormedia.com. Email us at podzor@rockstormedia.com.
Yeah, if you send us an email until, you know, we become so famous that we can't keep up,
we'll read
your email on the air.
So we
that?
Almost reached our bandwidth cap.
Oi, I didn't know we almost reached the cap.
Yeah, it was 4 gigs out of 20. We didn't almost reach it.
Okay.
But 4 gigs, that's actually the largest
what is
amount
that,
in 1 month.
40 downloads? I don't know. It's a 40 gig
dude,
file.
Our podcasts are about 50 megs.
Or 50 megs, yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
so
40, it's
50 megs. Oh, wow. I really don't believe.
But we've got a bunch of video and stuff up there too. So.
I'm gonna have to fess up. I downloaded our podcast 80 times to make us feel good about ourselves.
Oh, bastard! Now I don't feel good about myself. Don't admit it. Okay. The next section is science and tech stuff. Linus wants money to protect the Linux trademark. I thought this was interesting.
Well, let's tell everybody who Linus Torvalds is. The guy who pretty much is the father of Linux.
Right. Now there's this guy at Berkeley that I guess invented FreeBSD or GNU.
Okay.
But anyway, Linus Torvalds is pretty much he's the guy that did Linux.
Right. When you say Linux, Linus and Linux go
right.
Hand
and
hand.
In fact, a lot of people pronounce it Linux, and to this day, I don't know which is right.
I believe it's Linux, but I
because
could be wrong.
Obviously, Linus developed it based on Linux, and it would only make sense that
you mean Unix.
Unix, I'm sorry, yes. Based it on Unix, and it would kind of only make sense that it was Linux.
Sure.
His version of Unix.
Sure.
But,
who knows?
Tomato, tomato.
Right.
Whatever. The interesting thing is he doesn't really want to start charging people to use it. What he's most concerned about is that it will go the way of Xerox and Kleenex.
Right.
In that he'll lose the capitalization on the word.
Yes.
So
well,
then,
and you know why he's worried about this is that there are people out there abusing the Linux label,
right,
and trying to make money off it, claiming it's theirs or doing whatever they do,
or claiming it's Linux when it's not.
Right.
And so I think what's going to happen is that what he fears, and I think it's a genuine fear, because the layperson would assume that any operating system that's not Windows and not Mac is Linux.
Right, which is not true.
Right. Just like most people assume that FreeBSD is Linux.
Right, it's not. It's a Unix.
It's another flavor of Unix.
Right.
Yeah, just like Linux is.
Right.
So, and again, you know, the Mac thing, OS X, not based on Linux.
No, it's based on
FreeBSD.
It's based on Free. It's a FreeBSD. FreeBSD, yes.
Yeah. So he's just trying to collect money. It's not greed. It's just that he's trying to protect the purity
right.
of what Linux is.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing.
And here's a little message for all your people, you know, who are out there making him do this because you're abusing the Linux label.
Don't do that.
Fuck you. Stop doing it because you're ruining it for the rest of us.
Anyone else that's curious about Linux, there is a excellent download called Nopix.
Nopix, yep.
And we'll try and get a link on our show notes.
We'll do a Linux episode where we talk about different Linux builds
but
and
Nopix,
stuff like that.
What Nopix is it's on a single CD. You put it in your machine, you boot your machine, it runs right off the CD, and you can get a taste of Linux without actually having to change anything at all on your hard drive.
It's a CD-based operating system.
It's a CD-based operating system.
It's Linux. It's very cool.
You have to do some other stuff to actually have it be persistent.
Right.
Because if you save a file, then you have to, you know, there's some weirdness that you have to do. But it's a great way to get a taste of Linux without actually jumping in with both feet.
Yes.
All right. Next on our list, Microsoft's bid to change RSS name sparks controversy.
Yeah, Microsoft and this naming deal.
They're trying to change it to web feeds.
Right. They want – because people – they claim – and I read the article and some other people claim that RSS feeds is a technical term that us programmers can use and understand. But you say it to the common everyday computer user and they're like, what's an RSS feed?
I've got to say, I agree.
You know, I was a little – I was pissy when I started to read the article because I just figured, here's Bill again trying to
right.
trying to freaking bulldoze
you
the
make
world
assumptions about
and,
Microsoft.
And remake it because I do. And after I got done reading the article, I will admit that I agree as well.
Yeah.
I think that
RSS just doesn't mean anything to anybody.
No, it has no meaning.
And if you say web feed, obviously you're going to have to teach me what that is the first time.
Right.
But it's more intuitive. It's a more intuitive name.
Yes.
To say web feed means they're feeding you articles.
Right.
They're feeding you stories. It just makes sense. So.
Yep.
I kind of agree with this one, and I think it's going to gain some momentum, because to tell you the truth, I'm kind of tired of saying RSS, and knowing that every time you say it, you have to explain it. Yeah, so I think that's a good one.
Storm Clouds Gathered Over podcast.
I was going to skip that one.
You were?
Okay. But what was that one?
Just talking about... Oh, yeah, just talking about how podcasting's becoming this big thing. Oh, no, that was the podcast of the music labels.
Oh, yeah.
This is kind of important, actually.
Yeah, it is. Anybody out there that's looking at doing a podcast, one of the things you've got to be really cognizant of, copyright laws for music. Now, I don't know what the copyright laws are as far as – I'm not making any money off of this.
Yeah, but this is the problem.
And I don't know what the copyrights are. Well, what's the law if you take donations?
Well, here's the problem.
You know,
here's the deal.
You know a lot about the copyright law for music, right?
Right, because I work for a jukebox company, and we deal with music copyrights. And the music business is atrocious for this.
Yeah.
They don't actually know who owns the copyrights to anything. They're a bunch of idiots. All they know is that you owe them, you know, some company, you owe them money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them, you know, I want to buy the rights to play this song, they go, well, we know that you owe us 5% of whatever you take from the song.
Right.
But we have no idea who actually sang it or how much you owe them or who produced it or whatever. Well, they don't even have a record of it. In fact, we had to pay a company thousands and thousands of dollars to go research who we had to pay just to play.
So you didn't get sued.
Get sued because the music industry. I mean, why would you not track that? I mean, it just makes sense. In fact, you could make more money by offering people your list of things. I mean, in my honest opinion, the music industry is a bunch of thieves, and they're probably screwing the artists every day in this that way from Sunday, and it's a real shame because they're getting screwed.
They're the ones that make the music,
right? And then of course, so anyways, what this house has to deal with is if you're to play a song on your podcast from start to finish. They're claiming someone can go into the podcast, cut that song out, and then put it onto a CD. And they're equating that to essentially
sharing.
File sharing. Which is ridiculous.
And I noticed Keith and the Girl does it. At the end of their show,
right.
Every show, they have both clips from comedy shows and usually a full-length song.
Right.
Now, they're not making any money.
That doesn't matter,
They
though.
Take donations – but they're not making.
But it doesn't
money.
Matter if you hear a song making any money, it's still illegal to copy
That's
the
true.
Song.
That's true.
Right.
Yep.
And you know, it's the same reason like a radio station has to have the rights to play their songs on there. So their selection of music, they've made a deal with somebody that it's okay for them to play that on the air, and they get the advertising fees and all that kind of stuff. Well, a podcast where you play songs is like a radio show. Just because it's pre-recorded doesn't mean you don't have to have the same rights. So you need to be very careful about that if you're going to do podcasts.
Our music, by the way, was created by Scott Ransom, a guy I met at a Visual Studio conference down in Florida 2 or 3 years ago. So
awesome. So we're using his music.
Yeah.
I wonder where you got that.
I talked to him about it for one of the movies that we made, and he's like, anytime you want to use my music for anything you want to use it for, go ahead and use it.
Awesome.
So, yeah. So I'm not even going to get into that mix. I don't even want to touch it.
No, me either.
It's too dangerous. And more and more there are there's freely available music as well. So
yes.
There's just not any need for it.
Well, let's move right to Mephit from audio to video.
Audio to video, yeah. This is very interesting. And this brings up a point that you and I were talking about. I personally think that podcasting, once MP3 players get a little more ubiquitous, it's going to be the next big thing. I really think this is going to hit hard. And my prediction for the next 4 to 6 months is that Microsoft will come out with an update or Media Player 11 that will include podcasts.
Ooh.
Once that happens, podcasts are going to be huge. And the reason for this, the Mephitia is essentially video casting.
Yes.
Right? It's a vidcast. And the downside of vidcasts and blogging, and I think this is why blogging had a real momentum to it and then sort of died on the vine a little bit. And I think a lot of it, is that you have to dedicate 100% of your focus to a blog or a vidcast.
Yes.
Because when I'm listening to my podcasts, I can be driving. I can actually be working while I'm doing it.
Yep.
I mowed the lawn and listened to Keith and the Girl the other day.
There you go.
I can't do that with these other forms of media.
Right.
And like I say, I think that once it hits the mass market and once MP3 players get more popular, it's just going to be everywhere.
Sure.
And I used to be a big fan of NPR.
Yep.
I don't listen to NPR anymore.
No? I love NPR.
I don't listen to it because I have my iPod with an FM transmitter in my truck.
Right. So you listen to
it. And so I listen to what I want to listen to instead of what I'm forced to listen to
through
NPR.
That's a good point.
And you know what? If I want world news today, I download the CNN feed or the ABC feed or whatever feed I want to.
That's a very good point.
So,
and that's the big push for what XM radio and stuff is. You
satellite radio.
Satellite radio is you get to pick what you want to listen to. You don't have to worry about commercials, none of that stuff.
That's all well and good, but you pick your feed. You don't necessarily pick
what's
your shows.
Right. You don't get to pick what's on it.
Yeah. So.
Well, if you're interested, Mephitia is M-E-F-E-E-D-I-A, Mephitia.
We have a link for it in the show notes.
We have a link for it, and it's just really interesting. It's basically video blogging.
I do like the idea. I really like the idea.
Well, of course you do. We're movie makers.
Yes.
You know?
And as bandwidth becomes cheaper and cheaper,
right,
it becomes more and more possible to do this kind of thing.
Right.
And that's probably one of the burgeoning areas. I mean, if you feel like you missed the podcasting bandwagon, there's a whole bandwagon for
nice.
I got this today.
Apparently you do.
My allergies are just killing me.
Are they?
Yeah.
All right. Next topic. $150 million behind Mega Science Grid.
This was just so techie, I couldn't pass it up. So what they're doing is, I don't know if any of you out there have, like SETI at home or folding at home or any of these things that essentially take up processor time in the background when you're not using your computer to do scientific research. Google has one.
Yep.
And they just sort of share out to, I think you have to bid to get your project onto their supercomputer, which is essentially a bunch of computers out on the internet.
Right.
Well, that is what they call a distributed computer.
Yes.
Supercomputers are similar, but essentially a lot of processors tightly coupled together. They all share memory, and they all share hard drive space.
Hmm.
So it is a lot faster. Like 10 computers on a grid, a lot slower than 10 chips in a supercomputer.
Right.
A lot slower, even if you have the same chips.
Right.
What they're doing now is they're talking about linking up these supercomputers into a grid. So essentially combining both aspects of that technology to work on really hardcore problems, like weather is a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
that, so it's going to be like a super grid computer.
It's a supercomputer supercomputer.
Nice.
Yeah. What do they call it in the Terminator?
Really big computer?
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, head to your bomb shelter because we're fucking finished now. Movie stuff.
All right. We're having a little bit of trouble coming up with the movie, and we'll separate.
You know what? There's not shit out now.
I know.
There's nothing out.
In fact, I was reading news articles about it right now.
I was
that
too.
The box office is fucking hitting,
and you know
hitting
why?
The bottom of the barrel.
Because I have heard that every year about this time, they don't release a lot of movies because of awards.
Right.
Because essentially everything that has won is already won.
The summer buzz is
everything's
over.
Everything's already decided.
This is actually the time of year, too, where they're taking new ideas. I read this. We'll get to this in a second. But I read this also. But there's a season for pitching your ideas for new movies and TV shows.
I didn't know that.
And the season, I guess, is the end of the summer movie blockbust to the end of September. There's like a two-month period. So if you got an idea outside that, you got to wait a
pitch
whole other
maybe.
Year
yeah.
for yeah. So we'll get into that in a second. But
okay. So
I want to
talk
about
Do We Know?
Yeah, I want to talk about a movie called What the Bleep Do We Know, which is a very interesting movie on quantum mechanics. It's a documentary / movie, and it stars Marley Matson. We talked about this a couple episodes ago.
Now, how do we see it? Because I
rent it.
Okay, so there's no download for it.
No, there's no download for it. You got to rent it.
I wonder if Netflix has it.
But it really is interesting. It talks about, you know, basically how the human body works, and it talks about they address issues like, you know, why are we here and what are we doing, and I mean all these quantum questions, and they talk about how the body really works and how habits get started, and it's just extremely interesting. It's kind of a deep movie, so you know you want to be in the mood to have to think about some things. And it's one of those movies where I've only watched it once, but I know if you were to watch it over and over again, you would pick up on little things. But they talk about perception, and, you know, if I look at something, does it look the same way when you're looking at it? You know what I mean? Is my blue the same blue as your blue? Like, for all I know,
right.
We have this plant here in your house, and it looks green to me, and you look at it, you say, yeah, that looks green.
And in fact, that has come up often in my life with my colorblindness.
Right.
In that people are really amazed at there was a friend of wife's that was constantly asking me what stuff looked like. She's like, what color is this? What color is this? What color is this? And it's one of those things where things look different to me than they do to the rest of the world.
Right.
And the interesting part is that it is physically impossible for me to have the experience of red.
Right.
I will never in my life know what the world looks like to a non-colorblind person.
Right.
And, which is just weird to think about.
And that's one of the things this movie covers is that you are always – you can never step outside of your role as the observer.
Right.
You're this you observe the world through your own eyes, and you'll never, ever see the world except that way.
Right.
And they talk about that, and it's very interesting. And I learned some things that I never even knew about, like the fact that electrons apparently are constantly phasing in and out of existence, and they still can't quite figure out where they go when they're not here. There are theories, of course, but no one really knows for sure yet. And there are just things they're always figuring out, but it's interesting. So I recommend it if anybody's interested in quantum mechanics, quantum physics.
Along that
line,
the book I talked about last week Brian Greene has a documentary called The Elegant Universe.
Yes.
Which talks about string theory.
Okay.
What's
string theory?
What string theory is it's trying to combine the forces in the universe. There's essentially four forces, right? We've got gravity, electromagnetism, and the strong and the weak nuclear force.
Yes.
Okay. And we have yet been unable to combine. The strong and the weak and the electromagnetic have been combined, but none of them have been able to do it, have combined it with gravity. There's no theory that includes gravity. So what they're trying to do is they're essentially trying to express in one simple formula.
Oh.
And string theory, simple is, of course, relative. String theory seems to be able to do it. the thing about string theory, the problem with string theory, is that the scientific, the laboratory tests involved are impossible with today's technology. So we can test the theory, i.e., gee, the world looks right based on this theory, but the theory came from the world.
Right.
So obviously it will be right.
Right.
They're working on there's some super colliders that are going up now that are going to run some tests for things that the existence of some particles that string theory say exist. Anti-electrons or something like that.
Okay.
I can't really remember the name of it. You know, I can't remember the details. But anyway, Elegant Universe by Brian Greene. If you want to do further research on that stuff, Elegant Universe is a great documentary, two-disc documentary. It was on Nova. And in fact, if you go up to Nova's website, I think you can download the MOV files.
Sweet. I'll have to check that out.
So,
all right. Well, let's move from quantum mechanics to magic.
Yeah. Because it's sort of the same.
It is sort of the same.
Oh, I got it. By the way, speaking of quantum mechanics, yeah. I got a t-shirt that says Schrodinger's cat is dead. And on the back it says Schrodinger's cat is not dead. Ooh, weird. So.
Okay, I don't know what that means, but we're going to talk about Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. We have a link on our website that actually links to a really cool new preview that's actually in German. There's German subtitles in the bottom, so it's from Germany. But it looks incredible. I mean, this movie looks awesome.
Now, I have seen a preview for it.
This is a newer trailer for it, and it doesn't show some of the things that the American trailer that I've seen, like on Apples. And it's impressive, and this movie's going to be much darker than the other ones. And if anybody out there has read the books, you know that this one's is dark for a good reason.
It's pretty big because it's taken forever to download. Oh, by the way, What the Bleep Do We Know is available on Netflix.
Oh, excellent.
I just added it to my queue.
Okay, good. So anyway, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
I'm pretty excited about it.
I'm very excited about that.
It looks pretty cool.
The special effects are going to be something to gaze in awe and wonder at.
And I just finished that book, so.
The sixth?
Yeah. No. The fourth.
Oh.
I have yet to read 5 and 6.
All right. Well, I thought you stopped reading four or fifth. Well, I've got
I stopped at four.
I've got the sixth one if you want to finish that one.
Oh, Jen read it the first night. She like finished it.
Oh, she got the sixth one?
Yeah.
Yeah. She like it?
Yeah. She liked it. Have you read it?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, to be honest.
I saw a t-shirt on T-Shirt Hell that says...
Yeah, this is a spoiler warning.
Spoiler warning.
Turn off your radio for the next 10 seconds.
It says, Dumbledore dies on page 3 or whatever. I just saved you $30 and 4 hours of reading.
I want one of those t-shirts in the worst way.
I know.
Okay, turn your radio back on.
They won't be able to hear
that. Oh, damn it.
Okay, let's move on to movie making tips. This is one of the mysteries... of for people that do handheld like camcorder movie making,
yes,
is that what the hell do you use a movie clapper for? And it took Sterling and I a couple of movies to actually figure out what we needed a movie clapper for,
even though we still don't use it.
We still don't use it.
We know why.
Well,
it's
and
useful.
we don't need it so much,
right?
Because what a movie clapper is for is, if you're recording the audio on a audio recorder that is separate from your video recorder, right? And a lot of times when Sterling and I make movies, we just feed it right into the video, so it's not as much of a problem. If you have a camera,
yes.
If you have any video feed that needs to match an audio feed that is not a part of that video feed, you need a clapper.
Yep.
And what that allows you to do, as well as, actually, now that I think about it, even without an audio feed, if you've got two video feeds.
That's right.
What the clapper allows you to do is it allows you to match up the frame, the timeline, on each of those video feeds and an audio feed. Right?
We had that problem with our Dungeons & Dragons documentary.
Right, because we had two cameras... and we wanted to switch between the angles, but the first thing we had to do was line up the two video feeds together, and then we had to line up the audio feed. And it was a huge pain in the ass. If we had had a clapper, we would have known exactly at what is, or at what frame all those two.
Yes.
So you start your scene, you clap the board, which gives you both a video and an audio signal so that you can match everything up in the exact same right. frame, and then you can start your edits from there.
Plus, the other thing we use them for as well as the audio and the video cue is nice because you can figure out what scene you're on. Because you may have,
yes.
if you shoot a scene two or three times, it may look the exact same.
Yes.
When you increment those numbers on that little board and you yep. see them on both cameras, you'll know that yep. you're on the same scene. That's yep. going to help too. It's helpful.
We don't have one. We need to get one or make
no,
one.
We can make one out of, Ooh. You can make one out of dry erase board.
Right.
Really.
Right. We should do that.
We will.
And then we'll post it. What
Great.
It looks like.
And then I've got a thing here because movie making is a lot about more than just filming. It's also about having a script because, you know, you're not just going to go grab a script off the web and do it because those are usually big, huge production movies, and what's the point? They've already been done.
Right.
So a lot of people write their own stuff. and I was pointed to a website called Castles who writes for – I got to get his first name here if I can remember the – Michael Cassett. And this guy's a writer for the Sci-Fi Channel. This the Cassett Files talks about the TV industry and about writing for the TV industry. And he talks about things
Is
like
a blog?
No, it's not a blog. It's just their informative articles and stuff like that. And he talks about the pain in the ass it is to be a writer for movies and TVs.
I would imagine.
And it's a lot of hard work.
I would imagine it's pretty heavy competition too.
Huge competition.
I'll bet you if you went to Hollywood, you could throw a rock and hit two people
right.
that want to write
and
for the movies.
One of the most interesting things he wrote about was he said this, you know, if you had a successful movie. You wrote a script and they bought it and it was successful. He said the next time you go in to pitch something, you could tell them you were going to film a movie about mud. You were going to write a movie and write a script about mud. And they would throw money at you to do it because you were successful last time you did it.
Have you heard on the plane?
No.
Now, this comes from Keith and the Girl. It's the only place I've heard it, so I don't know if it's true or not. Anyway, I don't know if it's true or not.
Okay.
But they say that Samuel L. Jackson is starring in a movie called Snakes in the Plane. Where the movie, essentially the entire plot of the movie is about some guy who releases snakes on a plane.
See, that's what kills me. Hollywood kills
me. I don't know. I'm starting to think it's bullshit.
It won't surprise me.
This is
the problem. Hollywood, this is what I was talking about to some guys at work the other day. We're in the Midwest here. We're from Michigan. And we get all these things, these fads and these things that happen and all this new technology or new ideas come from the West. And when they hit us, they're like 3 to 6 months old, and we're like, "Woo, look at this new cool stuff!" And
right.
we figure, well, you go out west, and they're this innovative society and all this kind of stuff. Hollywood's one of the most conservative, non-chance-taking industries
yeah.
ever. Those guys will not. I mean, granted, movies cost a lot of money,
right?
But the movies they've taken real big chances on are the movies that make them the most money. Yet they seem to refuse to take chances. They'll give a guy who, yeah, you may be a really great director. But trust me, every director in the world, you know, Spielberg and Lucas and even what the hell is his name? The guy who did the JFK and the guy who's infamous for doing all the really long biopics.
Scorsese.
They've all done bad films, you know, and Hollywood tends to just give all their money to some guy because he did a really good film in the past.
Right.
And no matter how stupid the movie is, how stupid the idea is.
Well,
and,
everybody's got to start somewhere. I mean, what's the movie that Spielberg made before E.T.?
What the hell was the name of that?
I don't know, and I guarantee you nobody else does either.
Right.
So.
So, anyway, the point is this. You either need to know somebody.
Yeah.
Or you got to have an idea.
And that's true of most industries.
It is. That's true. Or you got
to
have an idea that's so brilliant
right.
that it's undeniable. And here's the other piece of advice this guy gave, which was brilliant. And he said, when you're pitching an idea for a movie or TV series, explain it to the people in terms of other extremely successful
right.
movies. And one of the things I did is I've been working on a script called Solstice for like 3 years now.
Right.
And I've rewritten it like at least 5 times. And it's
I don't think is unusual.
No, and it's a full feature film, and I know it takes a lot of work. And I thought about what the Cassett Files said, and so I said, well, let me figure out what two movies my movie is like.
Right.
So I looked for two really good movies that were successful, that people enjoyed, that really hit it off. And my movie really is Stargate meets Alien.
This is Solstice?
Yeah. Think about it. It's about a rip in the fabric of time where aliens come through this rip and basically destroy the planet, and the humans have to fight their way back.
I would say it's more like Predator in Stargate.
Yeah, but I don't want to use Predator because Predator's – it was okay, but it wasn't as big as Alien. The Alien series, okay. That's why they've made – that's why they've had four remakes of Alien. Alien's one of the most well-known
– No, you're right.
Sci-fi.
You're right.
So,
but Predator was a classic in my mind, so
– It was a classic, and I'll agree. But if you were to pitch it to a Hollywood executive, is he going to buy Alien before he buys Predator? Guaranteed.
Right.
Guaranteed.
That's true.
No offense, Arnold. Predator was cool, but –
Right.
Predator
Alien
2.
Was, yeah.
I mean, Alien up through 4, as far as I'm concerned, were all very good.
Yeah.
This is nice. We got a little timeline here.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that sweet? We're using Audacity to record our podcast today, by the way. Just
yeah.
a little pitch for
and
Audacity.
If you watch in the background, it tells you how long we've been blathering about nothing.
So let's move on.
All right, RPG stuff.
Mark of Heroes level bump.
Yeah, real quickly here. The Mark of Heroes is the sanctioned campaign, the new sanctioned campaign based on the Eberron campaign setting for Wizards of the Coast. The 17th of August, they did a level bump, which means that all of your characters are now bumped to level 4. And they updated all the fast play characters. So if you play Mark of Heroes, don't forget that your characters are all now level 4, which is cool.
That's awesome.
Because levels 1 through 3 really kind of suck.
Yeah, they're kind of boring.
Yeah, I mean, and they suck in any game. It sucks to be a low-level character.
I've been thinking about writing another campaign.
Actually. Really?
Yeah. And I've been thinking about writing another campaign for... first level characters, so to go from first to whatever.
You should look at
now. What's going on with?
You should look at the Eberron books. The Eberron world is absolutely stunning. I
what's
love
going
it.
On with Winter Storm? What are we doing?
Winter Storm is on hold for a while. Winter Storm is our. I think we're on like year 4.
Of our, yeah, it's our pre-existing campaign that we've. Just
characters
been
are up around
time.
Level 10-ish, 10 to 11 yeah. now. It's a huge campaign. It's just like 12 players.
Right.
And it's insane. We get a house full of people, and we sit around a whiteboard that's the size of a kitchen table that's got maps we draw with dry erase.
And we went over the projector
stuff. Right,
last
and now
week.
We've been doing the projector. But that's on hold just because the summer was so busy, and we got to wait so everybody can get their schedules together. Now that the summer's kind of calmed down, I'm hoping to get another adventure planned.
Because I'm dying to play some D&D.
Yeah. And the campaign I'm running for Winter Storm is actually based out of Dragonlance, which is a really great setting.
Yeah.
And all the characters in the last adventure were slain by a lich cleric,
that's
basically,
right.
that slayed them all, raised them from the dead, and now they're all undead.
But one of the ones that I've been thinking about is... Temple of Elemental Evil.
Oh, I would love to run that.
Which is a very old campaign, and I've actually run it once. It was so long ago, I don't really remember.
They've re-released it for the 3.0, 3.5 rules.
And it was really good when I went through
it. I was that close to buying that and running everybody through that.
Because you know what? That's one of those things, I think half the gumption trap of doing it is making the whole thing up and getting the creatures together and blah, blah, blah.
Being the DM is
a lot of prep work. And so if you just... I mean, I think it's fun to make up a campaign, but it's also nice to just buy one and be done with it.
Right.
And you can tweak it if you really want to. Yeah. But yeah, Temple of Elemental Evil is a great one. So
I agree. With
I don't
that.
Know. I'll buy it if you run it.
Ha ha ha! I'd love to run it.
How much is it?
I don't know.
I'll buy it if you run it.
I'll run it. Right. Underdark expansion for D&D minis. And I don't know how many of you guys out there do the pewter minis or used to do the pewter minis, but. Wizards of the Coast came out with their plastic line of minis that are, you know, mass manufactured.
That's
They're
right.
pre-colored.
A lot cheaper, right?
All that stuff. It's $20 for 10 minis. So it's about the same price to buy them individually or not. But, you know, you don't have to paint them. I think the quality's good.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're a
hobbyist into painting. Then
yeah, if you're a hobbyist or a traditionalist, you're probably not going to like them. But I love them.
Yeah.
And the minis that are – I mean, you get – now they're putting out huge minis, huge dragons.
Those are fun.
Awesome.
Those are fun.
They're awesome.
Yeah. They're fun as a player. They're just fun to get a little bit more perspective.
Right.
You know?
And so the Underdark expansion is coming out for the D&D minis, which is apparently going to have a lot of drow in it. And who doesn't love a good drow? I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
Everyone loves a drow.
Okay.
Okay.
Video game stuff. We're on minute 53, so
we got some time.
We got a little bit of time. Video game stuff. Lots of actual info about Nintendo's DS Wi-Fi service.
Yeah.
I think Nintendo is going to make a run against the PSP now. And I think they're late in the game. But I'll tell you
what.
That's
par for the course for them.
if they get internet games working, not just WAN games, but actually internet games working via a Wi-Fi connection, they will get a big boost in the market.
Yes,
because
I concur with that.
And from this article, they're talking about having an Xbox Live type service for your DS.
Right.
So you can go through and you can make a friends list.
Yes.
You'll get a skill level. There will be
very cool idea.
There will be persistent statistics. And if they do that, it's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge.
I agree. Here's my only problem with Nintendo.
What's that?
Could you have any more models of Game Boy? Oh my God.
Now,
what are they on? Model 50?
And I have a tendency to like that, actually, because to me, that means that if you got an original Game Boy Advance, guess what? They're still making games for it. Well, they're still making good games.
Yeah,
for
I know, but why Game Boy? Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Mini, Game Boy Mini to the Max, Game Boy
Mini
Dual Screen,
Game
Boy Triple Screen. Wait, you know, now we're going to come out with Game Boy
but
Quadruple
got, okay,
Screen.
Okay, let's talk about the lineage here, right? Or at least from what I know. Ooh.
Jesus, man.
That was a little liquidy. Yeah, the original Game Boy, right? That was Nintendo's, I think, first handheld.
Right.
Then you had the Game Boy Color, right, which added color to Game Boy games. It had new games for it, although it was reversed. It was backward compatible. Okay, so that's a next generation of system.
Okay.
Then you had and you know, if you want, they could have called it something different, but they chose not to. Then you have the Game Boy SP.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
Which had
SP.
SP games. Right, but also played the color games and the Game Boy games, so it was backwards compatible all the way down.
Well, as it should be,
right? And then you got the Game Boy DS, right, which was the dual screen.
Wait, the dual screen didn't come out for the Advance, did it?
Oh, I'm sorry, it was the Advance and then the SP.
Okay, so Advance,
the Game Boy Advance, then the Game Boy SP came out. The Game Boy SP took the Advance games. It was a clamshell design.
Okay.
It had a backlight, which the Advance did not. It was just a nicer form factor for the same games. Then the DS came out, right, which took new games, but also took the Game Boy Advance games.
All right.
But not all the way back. So personally, I think they're just coming out. And
now
the Game Boy Mini.
Now the Game Boy Mini.
Which takes Game Boy Advance games and has a backlight and is really tiny.
Yes.
So to tell you the truth, I think all Nintendo is doing is they're saying, there's a library of games out there. You have this essentially large variety of platforms in which to run those games on. Pick which one you like.
Right.
You know, do you like the clamshell design of the SP, which is a little bit older now, but you can find it on eBay for really cheap? Do you like the tiny design of the Mini? Do you like the DS games and the touchscreen? So they give you a lot of options. So I like it. I personally
they have a lot of options.
They have a tendency to kick out a lot more consoles, or not consoles.
It's just rare to have hardware come out that fast in succession.
I think one of the reasons that it happens is that they're just running the old games. So essentially, the Game Boy Mini, for example, is a Game Boy Advance with a backlight. But that technology has been miniaturized enough that essentially all they're doing is it's the same damn thing. It's just in a smaller case. So,
all right.
So anyway, what do we got next?
Online game ends in murder.
So some guy in game, I think it was Lineage 2.
In China
or Taiwan.
Somewhere in the Far East.
Crazy Asians. So stole some guy's sword of...
Now, he lent his sword in-game to a friend. The friend sold the sword for real money to some other guy in-game.
Right.
And then this guy goes to the police to say, this guy stole my sword and sold it.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
That police report.
Right. And so the police basically are like, well, that doesn't
you're
really,
crazy.
Yeah, that doesn't exist in real life. Go
right.
home, crazy
Asian.
He
didn't really steal anything from you
right.
at all.
So this guy said, well, screw it. If you're not going to do anything, then I am. He goes over to this guy's house and stabs him to death.
So I think the moral of that story is don't take these fucking games quite so seriously.
Right. It's a game, people.
It's a game. Come on.
And just like real life, don't lend shit to people if you think you're actually going to get it back.
Well,
it's not going to happen. If you lend shit to somebody, expect you're never going to see it again.
Don't loan what you can't afford to give.
Right. Good advice.
So there you go.
All right. 360 video for the Xbox 360.
Yeah. That video blew me away. There's a link to it on our show notes. And they have the new Xbox Live format, which kind of pisses me off. Because technically, I think anyway, they could put the new Xbox Live interface on the old Xbox if they really wanted to.
Sure they could. It's just yeah. Yeah, they could.
But
maybe they will.
The Xbox Live stuff blew me away. That was just cool beyond cool.
Yes.
I really liked that. The game, I don't know. I think it's Cameo. I wasn't terribly impressed by it. I thought it looks like a really nice Xbox game.
Right.
A really nice PS2 game. So I wasn't totally impressed. But the Xbox Live stuff, go up to the website, www.rockstormedia.com. We'll have show notes to episode 4. Check it out. It's a really, really cool video. Fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a big download, but it's worth watching if you're interested at all in the Xbox 360.
So, last but not least,
doing pretty good.
We're about an hour right now.
Books.
Aikido and the Dynamic Sphere, one of my most favorite martial art books of all time. Primarily focused on Aikido, but also talks about the theory of martial arts, the theory of distancing. It goes through a diagram of the dynamic sphere they talk about is these inset spheres.
What's it say?
Now you fucking tell me. It says my battery's running out. Oh, holy shit.
Whoa. Dan's computer just took a big old dookie, and somehow we're still recording.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Well, I don't know what's going on. That was really fucking weird. I hope it recorded this. Anyway, okay, let's finish this up real quick. Aikido and the Dynamic Sphere, good book. Go check it out. We've got a link in the show notes, www.rockstarmedia.com.
And my book was The Historian. And The Historian is I can't remember the lady's name now. We got a link to it up there. But The Historian is a historical look at Vlad Tepes, who is Vlad the Impaler a la Dracula. And it's a different take. It's basically this woman had a lot of stories when she was growing up, and she was always been infatuated with
Elizabeth Kostova.
Yes. She's always been infatuated with Dracula. And so she took a lot of childhood stories, modified them, put a fictitious lilt on them, and then told this big long story about Dracula. I'm about halfway through it.
$15 from Amazon. That's not bad.
It's a little slow for me. I'm a fast-paced action kind of guy.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of intrigue. Cool. So I enjoy history, which is the other part that keeps me going. I enjoy learning some historical things, and a book that takes that blurs the line between history and fiction is really appealing to me. I mean, the Da Vinci Code,
stuff like that.
I mean, they take little bits and pieces of history, put a lilt on them, and it makes it feel a little more real.
Lies are best told with little bits of truth.
Yes. So, pretty good book. I recommend it if you enjoy vampire books at all, just for the historical aspect of the whole deal.
Cool. So that's it. Wrap up episode 4.
All right. I'm Sterling.
I'm Dan. Oh shit, that's right.
Yeah, we gotta do our thing.
Okay, you're Sterling.
I'm a writer, and I do cool stuff, and I like music, and I like podcasts.
I'm Dan. I masturbate too much. And that's really it. And wait, I got another one. I'd be perfect if I weren't so humble.
Oh, nice.
That's it.
Take it easy, y'all.